Welcome to the Scottish Watches podcast. Wow, I thought we were going to have no news to talk about today. I was going to delay this recording until Sunday, literally hours before you guys are hearing this for the first time. But it turns out there's a lot of stuff to talk about already. So if I can get all this done on Friday, it leaves me the full weekend to do actual work. And we have Dave here to help me trawl through the archives of news, all these new releases, all these tidbits of information that have come out. And I suppose we have to ask how Dave is doing. How is Dave doing, Dave?
Dave isn't dead. Yeah, Dave's actually okay. Dave's feeling pretty perky today. The sun is out. Nothing much to complain about yet. But, you know.
Perky.
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 Cheeky, cheeky.
Have you got your tassels on, Dave? It's like hello, hello all over again.
Hello, hello.
So what has Dave been up to since we last spoke?
Dave's just mainly, to be honest, not even mainly. Dave's been working this week. It was Dave's birthday this week, so Dave is another year.
Can we continue to talk about Dave in the third person?
We can if you want, yeah. Yeah, he's not that important, so.
Impotent, not important.
Impotent.
That's why there's no little Daves kicking around, or Davinas.
Davinas. Better send a message to the doctor. He'll be thinking I'm really arrogant because I keep saying I'm really important. You need to do something about it.
So he diagnosed you with dyslexia. That's nice.
No, good. Good week. Just working. Nothing super exciting. What about yourself? As I ask you a question, as you currently take a drink out of your cup.
Well, I was going to say I wasn't drinking out the furry goblet just now, but I was last night.
Yeah, that's definitely not safe for work, is it?
Is it not? Oh, we had a complaint. Are we going to leave that in? Might leave that in. Never know. I think we should leave that in because it's not really swearing. But also, we had a I wouldn't even say a complaint. We fly close to the wind. We're the podcasting Icaruses of our time. And we had a message. It wasn't a complaint. It was a message from someone saying, oh, guys, you should have said that one was a little bit not safe for work. And we're talking about Kathleen.
Especially when on a microphone or on a speaker.
Yes. So it turns out our episode with Kathleen, who graced us with her physical presence here in the UK. If you've not heard that episode, go back and check it out. It is really good. It was a hell of an edit, but we got it done in the end. And she was talking about boobies, just like we were talking about boobies a minute ago. And apparently, talking about boobies over a loudspeaker when the podcast is on doesn't go down well with people's wives. Who would have known?
Really?
Boobies? No.
I mean, you know.
We've not had a complaint from it. People know what we're like. They know what to expect. And when we first get the message in saying, oh, guys, a little bit not safe for work, I thought, have I missed one of Kathleen's F's or C's? It turned out, no. They were all completely removed. As they should have been. We're going to do a wrist check before I tell you what I've been up to, because it's a watch podcast and we need to do the watchy stuff. So, Dave, what are you wearing on the wrist today?
Today, I actually am wearing my Isotope.
What model is that, Dave?
It is the... What model is it? That's a very good question. It's the... Oh, Christ almighty.
Did you pop into the opticians when you went out of the doctors?
Yeah. I went to the doctor for my eye test and the opticians for my importantness.
I used to date somebody that didn't know it was called the opticians. She used to call it the eye shop.
The eye shop?
Yeah. Didn't date her for her brains, did I?
It would appear. Mm-hmm. It would appear not.
Nope.
No. Did you impress her when you said, actually, this is the optician?
She says, I don't speak Latin.
Oh, dearie me. Amoa Masama. What is the model? It's a Guet Du, I think, is the way you pronounce it.
The Isotope Teardrop.
Indeed. The Teardrop, as I think you very remember. The Teardrop is, I think, memorably. Oh, that's a whole different thing. The Teardrop, as I believe you may have described it to Jose.
Yeah, and he said that that's kind of what that means in French, whatever the real name is.
Indeed. So this is the orange one, which is, I really like it, with orange being one of my favourite colours. It's a great watch on the bracelet. Yep, so had that one most of the day.
And that is a compressor style. It's got the internal rotating bezel.
Indeed, it's got the internal rotating bezel, 200 metres water resistance. This one is the automatic with the Seiko movement, I think it is in this one. And it has...
Date or non-date?
It is date as well. This one has the bracelet and also has the rubber strap with it as well. But the bracelet, at first I thought I would definitely wear it on the rubber strap, but the bracelet, as it turns out, is extremely comfortable and the micro adjust on it is really good, works well. So this is a cracking value proposition for the money, to be fair. I believe there may be some of the colours still available. So if anyone is interested, jump onto his site and see what colours are available.
Yep, It's a great little watch. We had him on the show just a couple of months back there, giving his sort of deep dive into the history of the watch himself, where he came from and where he's taking the brand. And it is a great little piece. He was so thankful for the episode that we put out and the response that he had. They actually offered me one free of charge, which I dutifully accepted on behalf of all you listeners. I can do wrist shots on Instagram. But it's a great little watch. I've actually got it on the Tropic strap because I quite like the look of it on that. And it's a darker green, but it's got the green accenting on the dial, the hands and whatnot. And the only thing I'm not 100% on with his watch and most of the other all the compressors that I've played with, it's too easy to bump that adjustment crown because it doesn't lock. And on a dive bezel, you know, they're designed so they can only move one way, and if you accidentally bump them, they can't go the opposite way, so they can never give you more time underwater. All they can do is give you less time, so you obviously rise to the surface and you don't have problems. Whereas on those watches, it's quite easy just to move it and it moves back and forward. Not that we're going to use these things as actual dive tools, but a locking mechanism might go a long way. You never know.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And since we've got all these brands listening to us telling them what to do, maybe they'll take note of that one. Who knows?
Indeed, indeed. I mean, you know, we've already got folk to move release dates because of a little bit of enticement from us, you know.
We'll talk about them in a minute.
Indeed, indeed. So, moving on to you. Do you have anything adorning your wrist this fine weather day?
Yes, I do indeed. I already posted on Instagram because you posted your wrist shot. I thought, oh, I'm going to do mine as well then. Today, I'm wearing my Tudor Black Shield Fast Rider Ducati Edition, which is now discontinued.
The original ceramic Tudor.
The Black OG ceramic Tudor. I think this was actually the first Tudor ceramic that ever came to market.
I think you might be correct, because that I think that was pretty early on in the kind of the days of Tudor being revived as a brand. I don't think it was
2015, 16 maybe?
Yeah, around about then. I think that model was available reasonably early on in the kind of the brand coming back to market, along with those early ETA equipped Black Bays. So yeah, it's a cracking piece. It's not super my thing, but it's definitely very you.
Yeah, I got this one 2017. It was the second purchase that I kept. Obviously, there was a couple of watches I bought that one went back straight away. The other one I sold quite quickly. So I got my Batman and then I get this Tudor. You guys may have heard the story before. Got it from the same dealership. They tried to punt it to me when I was buying my Batman. I was like, no. I just want to enjoy one watch at a time. Thanks all the same. And it's been brilliant. Apart from it, I did have to go back to Rolex headquarters, Tudor headquarters at St. James's, whatever it is down in London, because the rotor started to make some funny noises, more than an ETA usually makes in this, because it's a 7753, which is 7750 base. But it's a cracking watch. Love it. The colour scheme's great. It's a 42mm, but it wears small because it's black. It's got a matte finish versus the Apollo 8 ceramic, which is black gloss. And it is on the super shittiest, cheapest eBay strap, because I'm known for it.
To be honest, it doesn't look like a cheap strap. It's got that kind of rally style strap, and the colour palette on the strap matches the watch really well. I don't think it looks cheap at all, but you are well known for cheap, rubbish straps.
Yep. So this is one of my favourite watches. Don't wear it as much as I should. Going to change that. And the best part of it, and the best part I realised today, was it has got a little button on the side, which is, it's kind of the Ducati triangle, looks like a Wankel engine rotor actually. So it's got that, and that is the quick adjust for the date, so you don't have to spin anything, you don't have to play around with the crown. You basically just get something, just press the date pusher at the side and it pops the date forward. Super quick, super easy. I wish more watches had this. And it's got that mechanism, and it's got 150 meters of water resistance as well, and it's a chronograph. Very odd, but there we go. That's what I'm wearing.
After our check there to make sure Mizielle's not on our case, inform me as to what you have been up to for the last week or so.
Ooh, well, it's a week ago today. We met Kathleen in Glasgow, and that was fun. So it's been a very quick week because I've had a lot of working on a couple of websites for some clients, some video content, bits and pieces like that. So that's kept me very busy. And as I said at the start of the show, there's a hell of a lot of watch news, which is great because last month was dead. Nothing happened at all. But it's been a hell of a week. I started off on a little shopping expedition, went into Currys, which is an electronics store here in the UK, and had a look at some of their 8K tellies. And I could not tell a bloody difference between 8K and 4K.
I'm sure I've read somewhere that effectively once you go much above 4K on a standard sized home television, the human eye kind of struggles to see much more depth of definition unless the screen is physically cinema sized. So really 8K TVs in the house are a marketing trick or marketing nonsense of, yes, technically it is 8K, but the human eye is beyond the point of comprehension of the human eye. Therefore, you're paying a lot of money for something that you can never actually utilise in any real sense.
This is what they said when HD tellies came out, and they had the whole HD ready, which really meant 720p, and they had full HD, which was 1080p. And they said if you sat something like 4 feet away, you couldn't really discern a difference with normal eyesight. And unless you've got a massive telly, even 4K is... I don't have any 4K content that I play on my TV, and I've got a 65-inch OLED.
Yeah.
1080p looks great when I'm sitting on the couch. As long as you don't have to pan your head left and right, then you're not going to worry about the resolution. So I think 8K at any size below probably, 85 inches is probably just a waste of time. But I had a look at them anyway, because I thought, okay, I pixel peeped by going up right close, checking it out, and then going to like the 4K one that was beside it, and I couldn't spot a difference. So there we go, there was that. And I bought a new kettle. Well, I tried to buy a new kettle when I was in there.
Last of the big spenders. Last of the big spenders.
Now, you
spenders.
Know what?
Go on.
I was thinking of you guys, because this kettle is glass, and it's got blue LEDs in it. And when it boils, the blue LEDs go through the water and the boiling bubbles and all the rest of it. And I thought, that'd make a great background for videos. But they didn't want to sell me. They had me stand around for 10 minutes as they dicked around. So after 5 minutes, I thought, After 7 minutes, I pulled my phone out, went on Amazon and bought it for £8 cheaper. Then I walked out.
People wonder why the high street retail is dying on its feet.
I managed to get a Pfizer shot.
Hey, you're half not dead.
Yes. So if you guys have been listening for a wee while, I have been trying since April, May time to get Pfizer'd. And nobody I spoke to, I went to, how many was that? That was 2 different places and spoke to 4 different people at each of the places and was told, no, in Scotland or the UK, you're not allowed to pick. If you're over the age of 40, you're getting AstraZeneca and you can toss a coin if you're going to die or not. So that was that. And I finally found a place. If anyone in Scotland is looking for a Pfizer shot, you want to be taking yourself up to Falkirk's Community Hospital drop-in centre. It's about a 20-minute wait, and you can go in there and they will give you Pfizer. And when I was explaining the situation to the person who was about to jab me, that this has taken months and months, I managed to get COVID in the meantime, she was shocked and stunned that any NHS place would be telling you you can only have this one thing and you have no choice. So great. The other thing was, it's usually an 8-week wait in between 1 and 2 jabs. They said that I could come back within 21 days or more. So I could basically take 3 weeks, come back and get the second one and get my COVID vaccine passport, which means I can go wherever I want.
Excellent. So you'll soon be able to be international. So watch out, world. Ricky's coming back.
Missing out on Geneva watch days, missing out on the Italian watch and jewellery show, but our little trip that we've got planned and Dubai and a few other things, they are all on the cards. And after my Pfizer shot, everyone was saying, oh, you're going to be really, really unwell the first day, or you're going to be really unwell the second day. Not a problem. Straight through it. No ill effect. So happy with all that. And the only other thing I've really been doing, as I mentioned, what we do in the shadows, the movie that was out a couple of years back, I'd watched that. There's a series, and there's 2 seasons of it, which I managed to get from the Pirate Bay. So I have shot through 20 episodes of this, and it is really good. It's funny, but not hysterically funny, but some of it is just amazing. Very well written. A lot of people you'd recognise. It's not the same people in the series as in the film. You've actually got the boss guy, can't remember his name, the boss guy out of the IT crowd. Is it Denham?
Denham, that's it. Yep, Denham.
Yeah, him. Is it Matt Berry that plays him? But he's in it, and his one-liners are just amazing. So definitely check that out if you're into a bit of fun. Apart from that, not much else. One YouTube video that Mizzy will put in the show notes is from Insider, and it's with Kane Vincent Dyer, who was a bank robber in the States. And he basically explains how he robbed banks and how it is different from Hollywood and how they show things. Not that any of these bits of information will be helpful these days, but it's a good history lesson.
You're back in the funding the watch cycle. Is that what this is about?
Well, listen, that Rolex boutique in Glasgow hasn't phoned me to say my watch is in, so I might pay them a visit.
A wee nighttime visit.
Yep, lovely. My wee swag bag, my glass cutter. So that is that, but we're here to talk about watches. And we gave Zach Blass a hard time about the Time and Tide website being out of date and having a copyright of 2019 in the bottom of it. Turns out they've got a new website now and it's got the correct date in the bottom.
Hey! People listen to us.
Our services are just, people listen to us. You know, shit happens when we open our mouths. So that's that. We also spoke with Monica from The Blue Company. She is the UK distributor for a number of brands that we know and love. And she also deals with the likes of Wallace's over in Ayr, James Porter and Son in Glasgow. And she brings in Doxa, Youngins, Meister Singer, Müller Glas Schutte, Scala de Tempo, and various other product ranges. So she's back her holidays and hit us with a whole load of information of some new watches that are coming out, including a Time and Tide limited edition, which is coming out the day you listen to this. So that is, we don't have any photos of it, but we might have by the time the episode airs, which means we can drop it in the show notes. But she was talking about that. It's a titanium release. It's the Doxa 600, sub 600, she was saying.
Yep, indeed. And it's, I think it's called the Pacific Limited Edition, I believe.
Nice to see you've been pacific about that information. Good,
Wow.
I hate people that say that. Oh, it's like the memes you've seen where they get the words mixed up.
Yes, yeah, so when they say, yeah, that's really pacific. And you're like, sorry, it's what? Really pacific.
I thought it was more Atlantic. I've said that to people and they have no clue.
No, I was more going for, you know, North Atlantic drift, you know.
It's like there's a meme kicking around Mizzy, I'll stick in the show notes, and I'm going to ruin it by saying the words, but I'm going to do that anyway. And it's people who have commented on how their boyfriend smells, and instead of saying their aftershave or whatever, like we do in the UK, it's cologne, but they spell it colon. So it's messages like, I love the smell of my boyfriend's colon on my pillow.
This is why, kids, you should focus at school, because you're not going to make an idiot of yourself as an adult when you talk about your boyfriend or girlfriend's colon being a delightful smell on your pillow.
Oh man, speaking of delightful things and maybe not colons, but OnlyFans, one of our favourite creation platforms, decided last week that they were going to have no nudie bits, so that basically it was going to be safe for work. But then they had a switcheroo, and within the week they turned it around and said, right, okay, we have spoken to whichever partners it was, I don't know if it was payment gateways or investors, and everything is okay now. And I'm looking at this going, best publicity stunt ever.
Oh, as in the best publicity stunt that, you know, someone else claimed to do, but really turned out not to be the best publicity stunt ever, whereas this one in fact is
genius British marketing.
Genius marketing. Whereas this one actually... Yeah. It's a pretty good little move.
Yeah. OnlyFans get a free advert on the BBC, basically.
Well, I was going to say, you know, they got onto the BBC, the main news on the BBC. I did think for a minute to myself, though, so you want to stop allowing creators who produce adult content being on your platform? Because when you think of OnlyFans, you, of course, think of all things except adult content, don't you? You know, you think of all that good, wholesome content that's on OnlyFans.
See, it sounded legit because last year or the year before, whenever it was, Hornpub, rearrange the letters, decided they were going to have, well, they didn't decide nothing.
They got told.
No, they decided. They get told, basically, that they had to remove all the unverified content because there was a lot of illegal stuff on there. People had been coerced into making movies, yada, yada, yada. So, yeah, OnlyFans decided to do a U-turn, which has been phenomenal for their sign-up rate. But another watch brand decided to do a bit of a U-turn, and this was to do with genitals as well. Coronis, or whatever it is. What's the story, Dave?
So, yeah, so they they announced a new watch, maybe start of this week, I think, round about there, which, as you expect from them, everyone kind of jumped on it. Oh, this is exciting, another new watch coming from them. And I've got some opinions in this that maybe go against what a lot of people think. Obviously, they communicated a message that this watch was for ladies only. And of course, this triggered all of those, you know, delightful males in the watch community who immediately thought, how dare you say I can't buy a watch just because I've got a penis, and lots of claims of reverse sexism, etc. I think Corona, to be honest, really did have the right idea. They're trying to encourage more diversity, you know, within the watch buying and watch collecting community. They maybe didn't push the message across super clear or in the best way possible, in that, you know, they could have maybe finessed the message a little. But fundamentally what they're doing, I don't have a problem with. What I do have a problem with was, sadly, the number of people, let's be very specific, males, who immediately jumped on, you know, saying this is absolutely outrageous. How dare you only sell a watch to women? You know, I've got a right to buy one of these as well, which I think just really was people showing their true colours in the worst way possible. Chrono, though, did a couple of days later revise the message where they again went out and said, okay, maybe we didn't communicate this in the best way, but basically this is what we're doing. And now anybody can put in to get one of these watches. They also, you know, the language was a bit confusing initially, where they'd said that it read a little bit like a man had to put forward a lady to be allowed to buy this watch, which of course is completely unacceptable. But they didn't really mean that, and they said that anyone can put in for this watch, but that they're still going to prioritise women who put in for the watch, which will push the end narrative they want, which is to get more women into watches. So it's an interesting one. I think there's maybe some issues with language and translation from Japanese to English in this one, but I think they're doing quite a good thing by trying to push a narrative of trying to get more women into watches, frankly, because as we know, this hobby is quite one-sided and one-dimensional when it comes to a lot of the people that are involved. But anything that folk can do to push out more people, different races, male, female, however you want to identify, into watches, then I think that's a good thing.
Okay. My thoughts are, I'm all for everybody being equal. On our show, we are very inclusive. We are not exclusive. We've had males, females, doesn't matter your background, what you're into, your race, your creed, your orientation. We have had everybody across the board, and it has been that way since day one. Now, when I say I'm into everything being equal, that's a case of I would never want somebody to say you can only buy this watch if you're a man. So when I read that they were only wanting to sell it to women to try and get more women into things, it didn't read properly. I understand what they maybe meant, but doing it in this way was not the correct way of doing it. It didn't sit right with me, and obviously the translation and everything else, because it was from a foreign tongue when I was reading the press release. Didn't like it, didn't sound good. It's great that they saw the error in their way so quickly and did something about it, because there have been various companies recently that have made a right arse of things and have stuck to their guns, doubled down, dug in, caused a scene, and caused a lot of horological dictionary Photoshop time to be struck up creating memes and whatnot. So I think they did the right thing at the end. It could be a good PR move for them accidentally, because I don't think these guys actually did this to create PR. I wouldn't like to see this is only for white people to buy, this is only for people of colour to buy, this is only for males or females or people over the age of or people under the age of. I like this being an inclusive hobby where anybody can get something. And I don't think theirs is, I could be wrong, but I don't think theirs is a brand that stands out that much, that there are many female collectors that were screaming that they didn't have the opportunity in the past to buy watches because they all got sold to males. I don't know.
It's obviously a much bigger question, you know, lots of the issues raised here. And I think you're absolutely right in that, you know, in an ideal world, you want everyone should be treated equally. And, you know, it doesn't matter what your background, race, sex, etc., as to how, you know, you're treated. I think the sad reality, though, is that it is a fact that, you know, there are certain areas of life that certain people have advantage over. And, you know, it won't necessarily sort itself and equalise itself if left alone. And I think this is one of these cases where, you know, I for one would like to see, you know, more people of colour, more women, more people who are not, broadly speaking, relatively wealthy white males. You know, I would like to see much more diversity within the watch sphere. And the problem is, if left its own devices, it won't change. And how do you do that? And, you know, ultimately you have to, you know, try and attract these different groups into it by ultimately in the short term favouring them to allow them to access into that watch space or into the space of watches, whether it's getting to buy things, whether it's making them feel more welcome. And, you know, it's always going to get people's tempers up and opinions up. But, you know, a lot of people get really upset by, whether it's kind of giving another group a leg up or an advantage over others to try and equalise things. But I think in the short term, you sometimes have to do that. And people quite often cry foul. Sadly, in this case, the people that were crying foul were the people who were the least reason to cry foul, because they have all of the kind of advantage at their feet already. It always turns my stomach a little bit when, you know, the dominant, well, let's be honest, in this case, it is broadly white males, you know, when they're the dominant in it and they start crying foul because somebody's trying to do something to try and bring more different areas of people into the watch sphere, they get lambasted for it. There's no easy way to do it. And yeah, I think you're right. I think the language and the message maybe wasn't communicated particularly well initially, but as you say, they did revise that and tweak that very quickly. And, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see how it pans out.
Yeah, I agree with your sentiments. I just think it was worded wrongly. And if they were looking to bring more women or whoever into the watch community that maybe weren't there before, a weird offshoot brand that probably 50% of our listeners have never heard of isn't likely to bring more people into the watch community, because no one's going to, no female would buy that watch as their first watch, I am guessing.
I can see where you're coming from, but I think where their thought process was is they're looking at their customer base and they've identified that tiny percentage of people who've bought their watch were women, and that they'd like to have more women as their customers, and therefore they decided that let's push a watch out that we're going to prioritize women before everybody else to be allowed to buy this watch. Now, I think if, let's say, they're making 100, if only 10 women decided to put themselves forward for it, then 10 watches would go to women. But it'll be interesting to see. It is a limited production as usual from them. It'll be interesting to see how many of them end up going to women, which will be driven by the fact that women who are interested in this piece will need to put themselves forward for a consideration to be offered one for purchase. And it'll be interesting to see if, you know, 20, 30, 40% of them end up going to women, or whether it is a smaller percentage. Because if it's a smaller percentage than, you know, 40, 50%, that says either there aren't as many women into watches, or there are, but they feel for some reason that, you know, getting access to watches is a challenge for them. So I think it's a very big picture. It'll be interesting to see how it pans out. It's always going to raise people's, you know, opinions and tempers to a degree when you do something like this. But I would far rather see brand trying things like this than just ignoring the fact, you know. And, you know, I have to give them plaudits for it. And, you know, as always, sadly, there's an awful lot of people with pretty poorly thought out opinions who shout loudly and, to be honest, in my opinion, just make themselves look like idiots. But, you know, it's the internet.
It is indeed. If you guys have got any thoughts on this, let us know. Drop us a comment on Instagram on the post that's promoting this episode of the show, because I'm interested to hear what you think. If you're a male listener, if you're a female listener, if you're way into watches or you're only just starting out, it'd be good to get a little bit of a temperature of the room on that one. Now, from one contentious thing to another, we don't usually talk about Hublot, but I was in a recent watch show with Paul Thorpe and Hublot was brought up. David Killoo was saying how they're horrible. You can't tell a real one from a fake one, you know, spend your money elsewhere. And Paul almost defended them. And I was asked for my opinion on it. And I said, well, you know, they're fine. It was only after the show that I thought more about it. And Hublot do a lot. They're the guys that invented red ceramic and have got the patents on it, so no one else can do it. That's why if you buy a Pepsi, it looks a little bit purpley pink. They're also the first guys to do fully sapphire cases for their watches, I believe. They also did, I think it was a Ferrari. Yeah, I think it was a Ferrari that had like 16 barrels of power that you basically used a Black & Decker drill to wind the thing up with. So they do a lot of cool stuff. Yeah, you know, there's a couple of things that aren't so great about it, but they've got a watch out that I thought we would talk about because we never really do talk about them. And this is their Big Bang Integral Tourbillon Rainbow. What do you think of this, Dave? Or should I not ask you?
So I agree very much with what
you're saying. Since you're inclusive, you know, and everything's great.
Hublot gets, you know, as you say, you know, Hublot gets a pretty hard time. I think the brand gets a hard time because certainly in the UK for a while, certainly and probably even still to this day, it does have a bit of a reputation of being on the wrist of kind of like footballers who've suddenly come into money, and it's the kind of footballers or, you know, watch of choice, which for a lot of people turns them off the brand because they don't want to necessarily be associated with that type of person. Although I think that's changing. You know, I think the days of Gaza and footballers out in the town making idiots of themselves and being drunk, they're kind of, they're past mainly, you know, football. I mean, You don't think so?
I'm shaking my head because here in Scotland, recently, a footballer ended up in the newspapers for sending dodgy Snapchat messages to a 15-year-old girl.
No, that's a good point, actually. I'll revise it in that, you know, a lot of footballers were bad behaving boys in, you know, 10 years ago, and less so now, but for sure there are still some pretty poorly behaved footballers, and they had this kind of association with the brand, and I think that put a lot of people off. Certainly it put me off for sure. I think as a company and their technologies are pretty impressive, I think, in the same way as me, I think of them a bit like Richard Mille. Very different brand, but both quite garish, a bit OTT, a bit look at me, check me out, look how much money I've got type, you know, kind of vibe that they give off. But fundamentally underneath, some amazing technologies and use of materials. So, you know, I'm not going to knock the brand for what they do. As you say, they've done some things that are really quite different out there, and some technologies that
hold on a minute, Dave. I would say this is a bit like your argument against Rolex. You don't dislike Rolex, the watches or the company. It's the feeling. It's the
absolutely
consumer and the image.
It's their marketing, for want of a better phrase. You know, they produce technically a great product. They use materials well. They do things with materials that bleed down into other brands within their group, etc., which ultimately leads to those materials being on watches that we do like. And if they weren't done by Hublot, for example, they might never end up on Zeniths and, you know, all these other watches. But for me, certainly, it's the marketing, it's the message, and it's the kind of image that the brand's putting out there that I just don't like. And actually, to be fair with most Hublots, aesthetically, they're not particularly my thing either. In the case of the watch that you mentioned, the Tourbillon, which I don't like anyway, so that's a bad start. And then Rainbow. Okay. I mean, honestly, it's horrific. I mean, it's just horrific. There's nothing classy about it whatsoever. I'm already not a fan of iced out watches or anything else, but, you know, I do joke a little bit, like a rainbow Daytona, you think, but it's garish. But this is just a whole nother level above something like that.
You don't got a rainbow Casio?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's not, I do, yeah, which is, to be fair, equally horrific, but it's also not the better part of, I think, nearly $800,000.
Never said anything about price, Dave. I was just talking about the looks.
Yeah, no, it's not
got
my thing.
There.
You did get me there.
Mm-hmm. There you go. So there's that. But, well, LVMH Group, Hublot, TAG, Zenith, Bulgari, those kind of guys, they work a bit with that master craftsman and alterer, our man with the plan, Mr. Bamford.
Indeed.
He's got a really cool watch, and it ain't no collaboration with nobody. It's his own thing.
This is a really cool, well, it's actually a pair of watches, two kind of slightly different aesthetics, but we're talking here about his just newly announced and released carbon fiber mono pusher chronograph. And this is a cracking looking watch. I mean, before you even know the price or anything else, it's just a good looking watch using some, you know, nice materials, not absolutely state of the art, but, you know, there's still not a huge number of watches out there with a kind of full carbon case on it. Mono pusher seems to be making a little bit of a comeback. I've noticed a few brands beginning to kind of come back into that mono pusher chrono sphere again. It's just a great looking watch, and then when you find the price out, you think, actually, this is an absolute, as much as watches ever are bargains, but this is, relatively speaking, a bargain for what you're getting. You know, there's not many brands putting a watch out with these kind of features and materials at anything like that price, frankly.
Right, okay, well, maybe you should actually tell the listeners what this is all about, because this is a carbon composite watch, mono pusher, that's only $2,500.
Exactly. So the watch we're talking about is the Bamford B347, as he is very catchily called it.
Is that not the road to Airdrie from East Kilbride?
Aye, I mean, that's, sounds like the back road there, doesn't it? Yeah. Is that not the one that goes past Auchinshuggle?
Well, I think so.
So this, as we were saying before we got distracted about Scottish roads, is a forged carbon fibre case. It's 41.5 mil, so really nice size. So coming in very similarly sized to the likes of a Omega Speedmaster, just under the size of a Speedmaster. So a nice size on most people's wrists. This is housing a Sellita SW510 automatic movement, which has a bicompact configuration, and it's a single pusher to control the chronograph, which is located at round about the 2 o'clock position. It gives you your start, stop, and reset. It's got a 30-minute counter at 3 o'clock and it's got the date at 6 o'clock. Couple of different colorways available in this watch. There is one colorway which is very black and white, kind of monotone, and there's one that's got a kind of don't know what we would call it, a cyany blue type colorway to it.
It's almost a neon, a light neon blue.
Yeah, both, honestly, I think both are stunning. They're both quite different, yep, as well, considering the watch is fundamentally the same watch. You know, this watch come, they both come in a rubber strap where there's a variety of colors available, and as you mentioned earlier, Ricky, coming in at 2,500 UK, and that's inclusive of VAT, available directly from Bamford and exclusively from Hodinkee for a period of a month before it will become available from other Bamford partners. Yeah, generally a cracking looking watch. I am looking forward to getting my hands in one and having a good look at it, because the minute I saw the picture, I thought, that's right up my street. And I genuinely thought it was going to be more like $4,000-$4,500. And when I read $2,500, I thought, okay, this is a winner.
Yeah. I mean, carbon composite, they're expensive.
Generally, yep.
Mono pusher chronograph, expensive.
Generally, yep.
Bamford doesn't do cheap stuff because it's not inexpensive what he produces. I thought the same as you, this is going to be $5,500, and it ain't. And it's not limited edition.
Yep, exactly.
So, by the time you hear this, it won't be sold out, which has been the major problem. And one of the things that's always, it's made me not want to speak about this stuff on the show, because by the time the show goes out, if you hear it and you go looking at the photos and you try and buy it, you're going to be pissed off all the time.
It's gone, yeah.
This is actually the right way of doing things. Is he actually sending one up that we can have a look at?
I have asked if he will send one up that I can have a little peek at and we can have a look at and get some photos. I really, from the pictures, there's some great pictures. I really like the shape of the case as well. It reminds me a little of my Zenith Revival Shadow, albeit it's a bigger watch, but it's got quite, not exactly the same, but it does have some of those kind of faceted edges to it. Genuinely, just a great looking watch. Yeah, and both colours. I personally think I really like the blue one, which he actually calls aqua blue, but the reverse panda one is also excellent. The white kind of tacky bezel or internal bezel on it looks excellent. So yeah, look in the show notes. Mizzy will have a load of the press pictures on there that you can get a look at both colorways, and there'll be a link there that you can find to have a look on the Bamford site at all the specs and information if you would wish to get some more information on it.
Excellent. And mono pushers galore. There is another one. We had Paul from Vera Watches on a good few months ago talking about the brand, the history, where it came from, and again, where it's going. He has got a new release, and it is also a mono pusher. So this one is called the Seagrave Chronograph. And this was hinted to me a couple of months ago when I was speaking to Paul on the phone, because once we have a guest on the show, we like to keep in touch, find out what's new, not just the usual newsletter that comes out. We like to have a bit more of a personal relationship with somebody, because we can get information ahead of time, get it all scheduled, so the day of release, we can obviously talk about it instead of being late with the news. But this one here, if you've seen Vera before, you've seen the colour schemes they use, the way that they use all these, I don't know, colours that usually wouldn't work well together, but they just seem to get that marriage perfect. And he said on the show, he looks back at advertising from Jaguar and Aston Martin and all these British brands from back in the day in the 70s, and he brings it all up to date. And this one here, I really like the look of it. It blends a fusion of typefacing that's modern and contemporary with a handset that's a little bit older with a colour scheme that is crazy. And then you've got the mono pusher, which again is a classic design, the case shape and everything else. It's a, I don't even know what it would be reminiscent of. Is that a pillow? Is that a cushion case shape?
Yeah. Again, like everything you've said there, I agree with. And it's, yeah, kind of cushion type compressor almost shape of case to a certain extent. So it's got a very, very late 60s, 70s vibe to the kind of case shape. Really like it. And it's also got little kind of cues and hints from some of the kind of older Hoyers as well that had those kind of regatta style watches with those colorways in there. You've got that kind of big eye sub dial at 3 o'clock, which gives you that kind of big visibility, you know, little hit of bright green, little hit of bright reddy orange, little hit of kind of really bright blue in there as well. But aside from those color hits in the hand, you know, it is not a garish watch in any way, but those little colour pops really do kind of lift the watch for me. I think it's a fantastic looking watch that, you know, there's fairers either tend to work for me or not, and this is one that absolutely works for me. I think just looking at the case as well, there's some really nice finishing on the edge of the case.
And I was about to say, at the edge where the pusher is, the what would you call that?
It's a wee bit like, it's not quite guilloché, but it's got that kind of guilloché effect to it.
It's got a sort of knurled effect that usually you'd expect to see a flat, smooth side profile, but it's embossed slightly, it's got that, and even the crown itself, is that a bronze or a brass insert they've used on there for a bit of colour splash where the logo is?
Yeah, absolutely. It looks like a little, I'm guessing, brass or bronze insert there just on the end of the main crown, which gives the logo and just gives that little colour splash onto the end there as well. You know, just a really great looking watch. Actually, they call it a lovely engraved harlequin pattern is what they call it on the case.
Right.
Okay.
Yep. Cracking looking watch. Great brand. We had fantastic response from listeners when that episode went out because we introduced some people to the brand and a lot of fans got in touch to say it was good to hear from Paul. So there's another episode to go back and check once you finish this one if you haven't heard that in the past.
Absolutely. And the only thing we've not mentioned about that is price point, which again,
I was about to say that.
Like the Bamford is a killer price point coming in at just under $2,000 US. So do we have actually a UK price?
£1,750.
Another extremely well-priced competitive watch out there that's just a little bit different and got lots of nice little kind of treats in the watch. It's not just another off-the-peg number, you know, and Farrer doing what they do very well is bringing something slightly different to the world of watches.
Yep. Inside, you've got Sleita SW510MP, which is running at 28.8 vibrations per hour, and it's got 60 hours worth of power reserve. So that's not bad at all.
Excellent.
Good. No, we're hitting out of the park with the watch releases. Kind of glad because, as I said, last month was a little bit slow, but I believe there's another watch that you're wanting to talk about.
Yeah, this is quite an interesting one. This is a collaborative watch that's come out from Harbring Messina. And
how do the hands look?
More aligned, possibly, would be the best way to describe it. But
good
this
to know.
Genuinely looks to me to be quite an interesting watch. The brand Harbring is interesting in that a lot of people maybe don't realise that they've got quite a lot of, you know, horological parts to them. A lot of people maybe have heard of the brand or indeed maybe not heard of the brand, but this is it's an interesting product, this. So Messina, as we know, is a bit of a veteran, and for the last few years he's been collaborating with various brands, whether it be Ming or MB&F and various other brands. And this is his latest collaboration where he puts a lot of his design kind of cues into the dial. And in this one, they have also tied up with a third person stroke company, which is Shapiro, who is a very well regarded dial maker based out of Los Angeles, who uses very traditional techniques to make some absolutely beautiful dials. So in this case, the watch is based on the Erwin, which is a model that's in the Harbring family. But this one has a dial that's been designed by Messina and has been produced by Shapiro. Now, it's a dial that's made in bronze and it uses some interesting techniques. The centre of the dial has a beautiful guilloché, which has been done by hand with an 80-year-old machine in Los Angeles. But the outer area of the dial has quite a specific grain pattern on it. And it's an interesting one because we have a little connection back to our great homeland, which it's called the Water of Airstone. Now, this is a very specific whetstone that's mined only on the banks of the River Ayr, a town a mere 30 or 40 miles away from Glasgow. And this stone is then used to create this grain texture on the dial. So this watch is quite an interesting piece. It also has a genuine in-house movement, which has been designed by Harbring. And this is a hand-wound movement, but it has something quite interesting on it. It's a hand-wound mechanical movement where it's been designed that the second hand works or shows itself more like a quartz watch, where it bangs, hits the seconds on the mark and markedly moves 1 second at a time rather than have a sweeping hand, which most people would be familiar with. Yes, it's deadbeat seconds, exactly. So it's a really interesting looking watch. Only 66 pieces. It's a 38.5 mil case, so it's a really sweet spot for a lot of people, and it's going to be priced at $9,450, which, considering the techniques, skills and people involved in making both the watch and this dial, is really quite a significant price point to hit to get all of these pieces into the watch. The other piece of information about this watch is this is going to be one of the first watches that will get its chronometer certification from the Horological Society of New York, who earlier this year had registered to be a effectively governing body that allows them to certify chronometer watches. So there's lots of different people involved in this watch. I think it'll be really interesting. My gut reaction is going to be these are going to disappear instantaneously. I really would quite like to have one of these, so I might go on a bit of a mission and see if I can be lucky enough to get one, because it is an absolutely beautiful looking watch. Again, not maybe normally what a lot of people would expect from me, but just something about it looks amazing. So there we go. Have you had a look at this, Ricky? What's your thoughts?
I have indeed. I was reading about this one on the Worn and Wound website. Shout out to those guys. They just hit 200 episodes of their podcast. Hopefully we can get them on our show, or we can pop on their show in the near future. But do I like the look of it? It looks okay to me. It is not my style. You guys will know that. It has got a bit of a Wessex Watches stroke Fears kind of look about it. Reading through the Worn and Wound thing, the bit that stuck out the most to me was when they put a photograph in the write-up of installing the dial in the watch. And it looked like a little platinum record that a midget would have won for selling a million records.
Yes, I have seen that image, and now that you say that, that's exactly what it looks like. Presenting to you your platinum disc for selling a million micro records.
That's what it reminds me of. So there's another watch ruined. So that's all I've got to say on that, as Forrest Gump would say.
I was going to say that was very Forrest Gumpy, and that's all I've got to say about that.
Indeed, indeed. So we're at the end of an episode, but we do have some news before we sign out, and that is basically to give you a bit of information. As you probably noticed, since the end of last year, around about November time, Rick hasn't been on the show. Obviously, things kicked off here in the UK with Brexit. That had a massive, massive kick to his amount of time that he had available to do all kinds of things, because his day-to-day business involves logistics, transportation, things like that, and everything came to a crushing halt. We hoped things would get better at the start of the year. We'd promised, you know, he'd be back on, and he wasn't, and things really haven't got much better because there have been continuous changes over the months since then. Things again in July took another turn there with the Brexit changes. So we've spoken with Rick, and basically he is leaving Scottish Watches. He asked us to pass on the message that he's got no prospect of being able to commit to the number of hours involved in the podcast. So, you know, putting in a couple of hours a week is just beyond what he has available at the moment, and he doesn't see that changing. He's also going to look at other endeavours. He's going to look more into doing some writing, developing his own audio-video stuff, and the podcast really doesn't sort of play into that. So watch and listen to this space.
Absolutely. And, you know, we can obviously send our heartfelt thanks out to him for all he's done over the period from the start of the podcast. He, you know, was very much a part of it. And, you know, sometimes life gets in the road, sadly. But, you know, we wish him all the best for his future endeavours.
And the door is always open if he wants to write an article in the future, if he manages to get a little bit of time, or he wants to pop on as a guest, because obviously he's appeared in loads of different shows over the past few months as well. So you get to hear his voice here, there and everywhere. But yeah, sometimes that is how the cookie crumbles. And again, you know, wish Rick all the best in what he does in the future.
Absolutely.
So that is the end of a show. And all I really need to say is check out our Instagram, that's where we post the most. At Scottish Watches, we have got scottishwatches.co.uk. We've got the YouTube channel, which eventually I will upload some new stuff to when I get some time. Check us out twice a week, Mondays and Thursdays usually. Usually we do an episode with an interview later on in the week, and Monday is all the new releases that have popped over the preceding 7 days. And that is about it, unless you've got anything else you want to say, Dave?
Nothing else to say. We will speak to you all again on Thursday.
Perfect. We'll catch you guys again soon.
Take care.